724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn. Pretty gloomy day today, although things have started to dry out a little bit after overnight and early morning rains. More on the rain expected later on today. A glance at the radar seems to indicate we won't see rain again until sometime maybe late afternoon or evening, but we've not seen the last of it, that's for sure, today, and even the first half of the day tomorrow. Well, it hasn't rained for a while. We've had a stretch of dry weather. Temperatures a little on the cool side, but you recall we had a dry weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, yesterday, so I guess time for a little rain. Kind of a gloomy day, though. Open talk on the first portion of the program today. A little bit later, we'll be chatting with guest Jason Beckwith about Action in Recovery. That organization has an event coming up in the not-too-distant future, early September, so we'll find out what that's all about. But open talk to begin with here today, 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. Are you a believer in capital punishment? Decision handed down yesterday by the U.S. Justice Department that prosecutors will seek the death penalty against Robert Bowers if he is indeed convicted in the shooting deaths of 11 people almost a year ago now, late October of last year, at Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh in the Squirrel Hill section of Pittsburgh. The decision by the feds comes just shortly after two of the congregations who worship at Tree of Life urged the Justice Department to not seek the death penalty against Robert Bowers, but instead, if he's convicted, seek life in prison instead of the death penalty. But the feds say they're going to go for the death penalty. Capital punishment. Yeah, it's controversial in parts of the country where technically we still have capital punishment. But in Pennsylvania, nobody's been executed for 30-some years, I think. In other states, it's been outlawed altogether. Southern states, many of the southern states still have capital punishment, and you'll hear of executions here and there in Florida, Texas, some of the other southern states. What do you think? Should we abolish capital punishment? The United States is one of the few countries with Western democracy that still have capital punishment. Most countries now have life in prison or other sentences for capital crimes. I don't know about Robert Bowers. I think what bothers me most about this particular case and some other high-profile cases is how long it takes to come to trial. You know, here we are nearly a year after the Tree of Life shootings. They occurred in October of last year. And still no trial. There have been postponements and delays and requests by defense attorneys for more time. I mean, I'm certainly, you know, not a fan of quick trials. You know, 2 days later and, you've got the hanging tree like they had back in the Old West. Certainly not in favor of that, but goodness gracious, it takes a long time, don't you think? And in this particular case, I mean, the guy did it. Let's face it, you know, that they got him with the guns and everything else, so, why the holdup? Let's have the trial. I don't know. Sometimes it boggles my mind. And what a tragedy. Nearly a year ago, huh? Wow. 283-2525 is our number. Open talk on this segment of the It's Your Turn program. 283-2525. Saw another story on the looming shortfall of Social Security here in the United States. This is another thing that boggles my mind. Why members of Congress can't just simply get busy and fix the shortfall that's facing Social Security. Right now it's projected that the Social Security system will run out of reserves by the year 2035. Well, you know, I guess if you're in your 80s, that doesn't concern you too much. But for younger people, and certainly people who have not yet retired, that's a concern, right? And it seems like it's so simple to fix the fund. I mean, some people say, well, we don't want to raise Social Security taxes. I can understand that. You don't have to. Just raise the threshold where people continue to pay into the Social Security fund. Right now, I think it's around $125,000. I haven't checked recently. I think it's in that neighborhood. But if you make more than that, you stop paying Social Security taxes for the year. Once you surpass whatever the current threshold is, $125,000 around in there. And for the rest of the year, you don't pay Social Security taxes. Well, simply raise the threshold. If you're making that kind of money every year, you can certainly afford to continue to pay Social Security taxes, don't you think? I think. And another thing that could be done, I think, pretty easily, set some sort of a cap on earnings. You know, if there are retirees who are independently wealthy, or who are still, maybe they're not working in 9-to-5 anymore, but they've got investments and significant income. And I'll say if your income, if your annual income is more than, pick a number, $200,000, $250,000, then you're not eligible for Social Security benefits because you really don't need them. Wouldn't those two changes be pretty simple? Would they be controversial? I don't think so. 283-2525 is the number. Open talk today. Let's get to the people. Hi there, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn. You're on the air.
Hi, Dave. I haven't talked to you for a long time.
Well, it's good to have you back, my friend.
Well, it's good to be back, I think. Hey, look, the reason I called, I agree 100% what you said with Social Security.
Yeah.
It seems like they do not want to, you know, they don't want to just take care of problems. They just want to leave it, go out and out, then use it as a political tool to for elections and who's for it, who's against it. Something so simple as raising the threshold would be the simplest matter. And like you said, maybe I would up it to $250,000, $300,000 where inflation is, but that should be it. You don't need Social Security. These people are getting more Social Security that's rich to begin with than most people make in a year working.
I can't understand why this continues to be a controversy. And how many years have we heard about this? Social Security is going to run out of money. Well, for goodness sake, fix it.
Well, they don't want to fix it. I mean, it's like a lot of things. They don't want to fix it. They just want to keep bickering and fighting about it. It's just like China and Trump. You know, it just keeps going on and on and on. And I'd like to bring up one other thing when you said about the death penalty.
Yeah.
I honestly believe, from watching TV shows that's based on facts and interviewing killers on TV that I've watched, that they don't want to get life imprisonment. They want the death penalty because it takes them never get the death penalty. It's 20, 30 years, and they have a private place to stay in there where they don't have to worry about the hassles of the other prisoners beating on them or hassling them all the time. And it just seems like our prison system and our court system has got so far behind with these rights for everybody that it'll never slow down. I mean, there's more people in death penalty, and there was interviewing a guy who was on death penalty for killing four or five people his few months ago, and the guy said, "I want the death penalty." He fought to get the death penalty, and he got it because he says, "I got my own private spot. Nobody bothers me. We have a couple hours of rec time, you know, and they're separated from the other prisoners." And then he said they even get better food, which sounds ridiculous.
There's a case locally in this area, and boy, I don't remember the exact date. It was known in the media as the kill for thrill. And among those who were killed was a police officer in Apollo in southern Armstrong County. It was like 35 or 40 years ago. And the guys that were convicted remain on death row here in Pennsylvania. Still.
Right. I mean, you know, as far as I'm concerned, maybe it's because I was in the service. Maybe it's because of my attitude, the way I was brought up. But I personally believe if you take a life and you're convicted and you have 25 people seeing it and they know you did it, they should just take you within 3 months, put a bullet in your head, put you in a grave somewhere. If your people don't want to pay for it, your relatives, then just put you in a hole. And that's it. You know, there's too much kindness. These people don't care about people.
Thanks for the call, my friend. It's always good to talk with you.
Thank you, Dave. Bye-bye.
So long. 283-2525. It's Open Talk here on the program today, 283-2525. Hi there, caller. Thanks for waiting. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Yes, I wish we would make America great again by making it illegal for them to take part of my Social Security that I earned but wasn't old enough to collect, and they gave it to the railroad retirement system. That was John Hines, and I don't know who the other guy was, and they both crashed in airplanes shortly thereafter.
I'm not.
I mean, they take my money. I earned it. I paid for it. My employer paid for it. But I wasn't old enough to collect it yet. Somebody decided they'd give it to somebody else.
I'm not familiar with this situation. When you say this happened...
1974.
When John Hines was a U.S. senator?
Right. Well, I don't remember who the other person was, but shortly after they passed that law, they crashed, both of them, in airplanes.
Was this a legislation that was sponsored by Senator Hines or something?
The legislation was sponsored by Hines. I don't remember who the other person was, but that's really rotten.
Well,
I wish they'd do something to fix it. They could. They should have to pay me back all they've stolen from me.
Do they still have a separate retirement system for people who work for the railroads?
Pardon me?
I say, do they still have a separate retirement system for people who work for the railroads? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't work there anymore.
Did you work for a railroad before?
For 18 years only. Places before that, lots of places. Yeah. And I thought, well, that's good pickings, and it'll just take some. Government people don't have any respect for
Well, we're starting to lose your signal here, but something I'll have to look into. I'm not familiar with what happened back then with regard to Social Security and the railroad retirement system.
But, well, I think it was just me. Well, it was 1974 was the law. Okay, hope you check it out, and I sure wish they'd have to give it back to me.
I will. I'm interested in that. Thank you. Thanks. Anybody else know anything about that? I know nothing. Don't know. 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. I do know that there was a time that people who worked for railroads had a separate retirement system. But I don't know if that still exists, or obviously we have a greatly reduced number of people working for railroads these days compared to 25, 30 years ago. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn. Nice to have you with us.
Hi, Dave. How are you doing today?
Pretty good. Nice to talk to you.
Yes, sir. Hey, my question is here. Whenever somebody is put on, for life imprisonment, okay? Do we not have to take care of these people? Do we have to feed them? We don't have to, we clothe them and everything. Is that not true?
Oh, absolutely, sure.
Well, what in the world is wrong? Why do a lot of these judges, whenever, you know, they go out and kill somebody, well, we're going to put them in jail for life. But yet, we have to take care of them. We have to pay for these people. To me, that's wrong. I mean, if you go out and you kill someone, the same thing should happen to you. Does it not say in the Bible, an eye for an eye? You know what I mean?
I've read, and I certainly don't have any personal experience here, but I've read that some people say it actually costs more when they are sentenced to death, but then we have years, even decades, of appeals and second appeals and third appeals and all of the cost of that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're still feeding and clothing that individual, and in many cases paying for defense attorneys if they're indigent.
Yeah, right.
So it can actually be more. This is what I've read in some wire stories, that it actually can be more expensive if they are sentenced to death because of the endless appeals that go on for years and years and decades and decades.
I was not aware of that.
Well, as I said, I don't. I'm not a criminal justice person, but I've read about that.
Yes. Well, hey, thanks for the information.
What concerns me is kind of a parallel thing, but the delay in trials. You know, this Robert
yes.
Bowers, the guy at the the Tree of Life synagogue down in Pittsburgh. It's almost a year ago.
Yes, indeed.
And still no trial. I don't understand.
I don't understand
how
it, either.
How it can take so long. I mean,
I don't know. Do they have such a backlog, or what is the problem?
Well, defense attorneys ask for a delay, and you know they want to bring in other psychologists and so on and so forth. I'm not for next day lynchings. But,
no.
But it would seem to me that we could certainly have trials that are far more speedy than what we have today. This is not the only case. You know, you're a lot of
many
cases.
More cases.
Yeah, where sometimes it's years before it goes to trial.
Yep.
Thanks, my friend. Good to talk with you today.
Thanks, Dave. Have a good one.
And you. So long.
Bye-bye.
283-2525. Open talk on this segment of It's Your Turn. 283-2525 is our guest. We'll take our number. 283-2525. We'll take a break. We'll be right back.
Everyone's trying to beat the heat, so why bring it into your kitchen? There's no need to slave over a hot stove when you can go to Michael's Restaurant. They're cooking burgers, hoagies, pizzas, soups, and salads to feed the entire family. So relax, stay cool, and take the family to Michael's Restaurant, Route 422 in Butler.
I'm Dr. Megan Miller, a primary care sports medicine specialist at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers. Whether it's a 5K or a full marathon, runners are as active as ever in these summer months. As a runner myself, I know how to treat the specific injuries, sprains, and strains you may experience on your journey. You can count on me to provide top-notch sports medicine care and get you back to doing what you love. For more information or to schedule an appointment, please visit TriRiversMSK.com or call 1-866-874-7444.
It's the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. We do it every weekday, Monday through Friday, starting at 12:30. Open talk right now. The phone number is 283-2525. Let's get right back to the people. Hi there, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn. You're on the air.
Hello, Dave.
Hi. How are you?
Okay, I'm doing well. How about you?
Fine. Nice to have you with us today. What can we do for you?
Well, I'd like to bring this conversation back to a local thing.
Sure, please.
On the Italian festival?
Uh-huh. Downtown Butler last weekend, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We, the wife and I went through town several times, and we had to come home Penn Street.
Uh-huh.
And at the intersection of Penn and Main.
Okay.
Main Street was flashing orange, and Penn Street was flashing red. And the police sat there at the intersections, leaning up against their car. And I can't understand why they didn't leave the lights just cycle normally. And if they wanted them to flashing, why weren't the police out there directing traffic?
So if you're coming down North Main Street Hill and approaching that intersection at the bottom with Penn Street, is that where Main Street was blocked off? No more vehicular traffic?
Yes.
Okay. So that's why the it would have been a red light then for Main, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
But I can't understand why they returned to flashing, and there was people making a left onto Penn. There were people coming straight across Main Street, and at one time we sat there for 4 or 5 minutes trying to get across Main. Why not just leave the lights cycle?
Well, I'm a little bit confused. I'm trying to picture. I'm hearing what you're saying, but I'm trying to picture. Why did you have to wait if it was a blinking if it was a blinking yellow? Why did you have to wait to cross Main Street?
Because we had the blinking red light coming down Penn Street, and there was a couple of times that you had a constant flow of traffic coming down Main Street, and we wanted to go straight across. And there you are waiting for oncoming traffic to make a right onto Penn. People going on Penn Street, they made a left to go towards the hospital, and there we were sitting at the lights. And you just couldn't move. You just couldn't pull out in front of traffic.
Well, I don't know. Was there a long line of cars waiting at the light at Penn Street?
Yes, there was. I know there was at least eight cars behind us and coming up. If you wanted to go towards the hospital on Penn Street, there was people trying to get across the intersection that way, and there was people. It was almost a constant stream of people making a left there. And you just couldn't move at that intersection.
So you say the solution would have been just to leave the traffic lights the way they were, have a barricade on Main Street so that you obviously wouldn't be able to go that way, and then things would have worked out.
Exactly. Because there were, you know, those, I think they were orange and white, you know, jerseys.
Yeah, the barricades, yeah. Okay, I see what you mean. From what you say, that would seem to have made sense. I don't know.
You know, if they wanted the flashing red, and the police were two police cars there, and there was four police there, and they could have taken turns directing traffic at that intersection since it was set up that way.
And I think they had greatly increased security from what I remember. That's probably why you saw more police officers as opposed to traffic.
Well, I agree, but I mean, why stand up against a cruiser?
Yeah.
Just watch the traffic.
I hear you, my friend. Thanks. Good to talk with you today.
Okay. Thank you, Dave.
Oh, sure. 283-2525. Open talk. Oh, my goodness. What's that? Hello, this is Dave. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Go right ahead. We have a little bit of feedback. Do you have your radio on or something?
I'm just turned it off.
Okay, now we're cooking. Now we can hear you.
Okay. I'm
okay.
Short and to the point, Dave.
That's okay. Go right ahead. Take your time.
On this capital punishment?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They put people to desk back in a little back room with just a few witnesses. Nobody sees it. I say put it right out on the courthouse lawn. Execute them right in public so people see what happens to you when you commit crimes like that. There's no regard for human life anymore, Dave. None at all.
So you're not only a believer in capital punishment, but you think that the execution should be in public?
Public, absolutely. Let these smart asses, excuse my language, let them see what happens to you when you do stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a crime. That's a sin, the way this world's coming to.
Well, I agree with you on the disrespect for life. There's no question about that. generations gone by, if you had an argument with somebody and it, you know, it might come to a fist fight, but you didn't pull out a gun and shoot somebody, and that
Absolutely.
Seems to be what happens a
Absolutely.
Lot today. Yeah.
Okay. That's all I got to say, Dave. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for your opinion. That's what we do on this program. When we have open talk. We share opinions. Yeah. Public executions, I don't know. We certainly did used to have them, particularly with capital punishment by hanging. You know, there would be a gallows built, and the executions would be public. That happened not only in this country, but in many countries in Western Europe as well in years gone by. Public hangings. I don't know whether we ever had any other sort of public executions. But electric chair, something like that. I don't even think they have electric chairs anymore, do they? I don't think so. I think most executions where they are still done here in the United States are by lethal injection. But even that has been controversial in some states where it's been used because of botched injections where people didn't die right away. I'm sure you've heard those stories. So that has raised controversy. In some areas, states say they can't get the drugs, these lethal drugs that they use. Some companies aren't manufacturing them anymore because of their particular feelings about capital punishment. So, I don't know. And here in Pennsylvania, as we say, there have not been any executions for many, many years. It's 30-some years, I think, since Pennsylvania last executed someone. And it's my understanding that right now there's a moratorium on executions statewide instituted by Governor Tom Wolf. Although that wouldn't seem to matter because you can go back through several governors, Democratic and Republican, where there were no executions here in Pennsylvania. Well, it's a question that bears discussion, and we do that every once in a while here on the program. Let's take a break. We will return and chat with our guest for today momentarily. Well, I'll tell you what, let me squeeze one more phone call in here before we hit the top of the hour. Maybe we won't. No? Okay. Take a break, my producer tells me, and then we'll be back to talk with our guest today, Jason Beckwith will be joining us. You're listening to It's Your Turn here on WISR. Stick around. We will be back after these words.
Does your small business need to work more effectively and efficiently? Then you need Sir Speedy Printing. If you're in business, they can print your letterhead, order forms, business cards, posters, and even do your bulk mailing, which includes printing your direct mail piece. They are the local experts. They know the sizing requirements, formats, and guidelines, and can probably do a bulk mailing for less than you can. The next time you need to do a direct mailing, consider stopping at Sir Speedy Printing for a free, no-obligation quote. Their bulk mailing service can save you time and money while helping grow your customer base. Stop by Sir Speedy Printing, 229 South Main Street, Butler. Auto accidents can be a terrifying experience. Injuries can occur at an impact of just 2 to 3 miles per hour. If you've had an accident, it's time to visit Applewood Chiropractic Health and Fitness Center. Doctors Lucas and Detweiler specialize in treating accident-related injuries from whiplash, soft tissue pain, and headaches to shoulder and arm pain, reduced range of motion, and disc damage. Let the professionals at Applewood Chiropractic provide you with the necessary benefits to aid you in your healing process. Applewood Chiropractic Health and Fitness Center, Thorn Apple Drive in Butler. Visit applewoodchiro.com.
You've probably heard that radio is the leading reach platform with over 93% of adults listening to AM/FM radio each month. That's an average of more than 243 million, which is higher than TV, PC, smartphone, and even tablet usage. Radio is stronger than ever as more ways to listen emerge, extending its reach to the majority of the American public, including millennials, Gen Xers, and baby boomers too. Because radio works in real time, the emotional connections made through audio have more of an impact on consumers than video or print. Business conditions can change quickly, and radio is flexible, offering fast production turnaround times, allowing advertisers to put the right message out at the right time. As a media consultant, it's my job to help you fine-tune your message, schedule it with the correct frequency on the right media platform so that you consistently reach your target audience. At Butler Radio Network, helping your business succeed is our business. To learn more, call 724-283-1500 or visit butlerradio.com and click on Advertise. I'm Lisa Marie Kendrick, and I love what we do.
Welcome back, good friends. Great to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program. We welcome guests for today. We're going to be talking about Action in Recovery and an upcoming event that organization is hosting in the very near future. Let's meet our guests. First of all, Jason Beckwith is with us. Jason is the founder, right, of Action in Recovery?
Yes, sir. Yes, yeah. I'm the founder of it.
Nice to have you back with us again. And also nice to say hello again to Jamie Lee from Action in Recovery. Jamie, good to see you.
Good to be back again.
So what's coming up? You have an event in early September, right, Jason?
Yes, we're having an event September 7th between 5 and 9 p.m. at the Butler Farmers Market. We're going to have live music, cook a bunch of food for the community, just trying to bring awareness for Recovery Month and just bring the community together.
What exactly is Action in Recovery? Can you tell our listeners who aren't familiar with the organization what it's all about, Jamie?
So Action in Recovery was started by Jason about 3 years ago, and really it's about putting positive works back out into the community, especially with those that are in recovery currently. It's just a great way to bring us together, unite us, and show that recovery is something that's attainable for everybody.
So we're talking about recovery from addiction.
Recovery from addiction, yeah. And as Jason loves to say, and I really agree with him, we're all recovering in some capacity from something in life, whether it's trauma or drama or, you know, addiction. We're all recovering in some capacity. And having an ability for the community to come together from different aspects, whether it's, you know, your child that has suffered from addiction or you personally that's going through, you know, recovery, it's a place for us to all come together, work together, and really heal together.
Are we talking about addiction specifically from opioids or from other things too, Jason?
Not specifically. It's alcohol, pretty much the gambit, the whole gambit mm-hmm. of addictions. But opioids were a main focus 3 years ago, but we've branched off into everything pretty much.
So this event, Recovery Month Gathering, on Saturday, September 7th, which, by the way, is not all that far away all of a sudden. It's a week
coming
from this
quick.
Saturday, right?
Yeah.
This Saturday is Labor Day weekend, and it's the following one. Is there any charge or anything for people that want to attend this event?
No, it's absolutely free to the community. We're just, again, we're trying to get the message of hope out there for everybody that it is possible to obtain and maintain recovery here in Butler. I seen 3 years ago when we started this, it was pretty dismal. The numbers were high for the overdoses and things like that. So we've been working really hard to change that, not just complain about it and sit on the sidelines, but actually get involved and do what we can, our part, to help make Butler better.
What led you to start this organization, Jason Beckwith?
I'm a person in long-term recovery also. I've got over 4 years sober, and I just thought that people in recovery like to be involved. They like to give back to the community. They feel that they owe a debt, so what better way to do is to organize that. As we know, the volunteer groups are lessening in numbers for across the board, mm-hmm. and our numbers are actually increasing. We've got roughly 200-something people that get involved in the community as of now, so I just wanted to steer that and kind of mainstream it into the community so we can help impact Butler. Not just for recovery, but the flood that happened. We have a kids' day every year where we give sports equipment to local kids to try to get them active in the community, trying to help on that end. Just a whole wide array of things that we want to impact Butler in a positive manner, because a lot of us were negatively impacting Butler. So pay our penance, so to speak, and do something for the community to help the community. So
wonderful thoughts. Were you involved in addiction to opioids yourself?
Yes, sir. Yes. Yeah, I struggled for about two decades, actually.
Wow.
So,
wow.
I started off on the painkillers from prescription and then moved on to worse and worse things. So
it happens that way a lot, doesn't it? Very innocently, you have dental work or some medical procedure, and you're prescribed painkillers, and that starts you down a very slippery slope, Jamie.
It does, and you know, one of the big things that we always overlook whenever we're talking about gateways into addiction, a lot of times it's trauma, childhood trauma, not being able to deal with the emotional state of things that have occurred with you that, you know, take us into that road of, you know, going down addiction. And, you know, in Jason's case and a multitude of other cases, it's, you know, your doctors at the time weren't really aware of what prescribing certain, you know, prescriptions were going to do in the long term. And you have a lot of people that are suffering from a multitude of different backgrounds. I consider addiction the equalizer. It doesn't care your age, your upbringing, your religious background, your race. None of that really matters in addiction. Anybody can, you know, fall victim to it.
I loved your phrase of a couple of moments ago. I even jotted it down, that you can be dealing with trauma or drama.
Yeah, yeah, trauma or drama. There seems to be a ton of that that always goes on with life. But childhood trauma definitely is one of the leading causes as far as, you know, finding yourself in a place where you don't know how to deal with life. You know, molestation is definitely something a lot of people struggle with. Having your parents breaking up, a multitude of different reasons really, you know, have that trauma. And then from trauma always tends to come a little bit of drama. And, yeah. You know, it's a difficult thing to overcome. But with what Jason has done and the platform that he's really, you know, put together, we are seeing better and better success rates with those in long-term recovery and also with being able to reintegrate into the community. The unity and community that, you know, we utilize a lot, that's really what we're aiming for, is the unity within all of us. You know, our community coming together, that's how we're going to heal.
What's your connection with Action in Recovery?
So I came on board probably about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, whenever the flood occurred in downtown. Mm-hmm. Jason at that time had brought, my gosh, so many people came with Action and Recovery. You know, Jason spearheading that to help with the cleanup of the flood.
This was in the West End we're talking about, after the torrential rains of, it was 2 summers ago now.
Yes.
Yeah, and whenever Jason showed up, that was really the first time that we had met, was during that flood cleanup. I was down there, you know, involved with trying to help coordinate some services and whatnot. And just seeing the passion that he had for this and the way that it was really able to bring people together from all sorts of different walks of life. I mean, Jason had Commissioner Oshie, that was one of the, you know, down there helping us, you know, get things into dumpsters. And you had, you know, people like Pastor Benson that showed up, you know, really seeing that this was something that united people from all walks of life. I just felt that it was really important to get involved, and I feel like it's been a blessing in my life to have this as something that I get to participate in.
So, Jason Beckwith, what's going to happen at your Recovery Month gathering on Saturday evening, September 7th, for people who attend at the City Farmers Market? Will there be talks? Will there be music? What's going to happen?
We have a local Butler band, Chuck Mosley and the Trash Bandits, coming. And we also have Chinese auctions. I'm going to speak for about 20 minutes just to address what we're trying to, what the messages we're trying to carry out to the, mm-hmm. to the community, and just fellowship, just people coming together and trying to meet each other and try to unite together. So the more people we have together, the more impact we can have on Butler. I don't want this to seem like we're victims, because of the disease or choice that always gets thrown up. Is it a disease or a choice?
Mm-hmm.
It's a disease of choice. So it's a bit of both. But I'm not a victim. I'm a victor. I take responsibility, and I do things to enable me to stay in recovery. And I believe that's the message, to empower people, to help them move on, so to speak, and get better in life and start doing things that they normally could without it. So I don't like to push blame, because that seems to be a big thing for people to say, well, I have a disease of addiction, so therefore I'm still responsible. It's up to me to do the things that I need to do and incorporate a lot of people around me to surround me, to support me. And that's what we're trying to do, is support other people and bring them together, because there's strength in numbers. The impact is, our numbers are definitely getting better for people staying in recovery. We're seeing boots on the ground approach, so we're going to stick with that. But yeah, the event should be great. There'll be a lot of people there, all walks of life. It doesn't matter if you're in recovery, supporting recovery, a family member of somebody struggling with addiction. We're going to bring a bunch of providers, local providers like Geyser Addiction Center, Butler Drug and Alcohol will be there, the Care Center will be there, Adagio Health is going to be there, a lot of different places that provide help for people. So if you know somebody that's struggling or something like that, we'll be able to link you into some kind of help that we have locally, resource-wise.
Probably being able to see other people who are in the same boat as you are might be a big help, too.
Yes, not alone.
I was just going to say, not alone in this struggle. We'll take a break. We'll talk more about this event coming up, Recovery Month Gathering, live music, auction, and food, Saturday, September 7th. 5 to 9 p.m. at the City Farmers Market, which is located about 3 blocks from Main Street in downtown Butler on Chestnut Street, right?
Yes, sir.
One of our sponsors on the program today, the Spencer D. Geibel Funeral Home and Cremation Services. This is really an entirely new idea in funeral homes. What separates Spencer D. Geibel Funeral Home from others? Their licensed director is always involved. They never use a third-party answering service. Your loved one never leaves their care. Nothing is outsourced. It's a very compassionate and easygoing atmosphere. They offer pre-need solutions. Arrangements can be made in your home. They can transfer all pre-arranged funeral services and policies. Spencer D. Geibel Funeral Home and Cremation Services, located at 140 Newcastle Road here in Butler. Local. They offer twice the service at half the cost. Better check it out. Hometown services at hometown prices. More options. A lot more for a lot less. Spencer D. Geibel Funeral Home and Cremation Services, not affiliated with any other funeral home. Back with more right after these words.
Concordia Visiting Nurses is a Medicare-certified home health agency offering services provided by healthcare professionals like registered and licensed practical nurses, physical, speech, and occupational therapists, home health aides, and many more. We also provide specialty services like palliative care and telehealth monitoring. If you're in need of home health care, choose Concordia Visiting Nurses. Call toll-free at 1-877-352-6200.
Need to get out of town? Check into Butler Motor Tours. They can get you out of town in style and in comfort on their big luxury cruise buses. Have you checked out their website lately? So many exciting trips coming up. Check out butlerbus.com and find out where they're taking you next. They have trips all over the country. They'll even help you set sail to maybe the Caribbean. Casino trips, historic landmarks, all across the country. No driving, no handling luggage, entertainment, and most meals all can be put together with no worries, all in an inclusive price. Call Butler Motor Tours today for more information, or again, go to their website, butlerbus.com, and check out all of the exciting trips. They especially take care of you around the holidays. Seriously, no better way to travel than Butler Motor Tours.
Welcome back, good friends. If you're joining us a little bit late, perhaps, on this segment of It's Your Turn, welcome. We're chatting with the two guests. We're talking about Action in Recovery. It's an organization that was formed 2 or 3 years ago here in our area. The founder, Jason Beckwith, is here. And also visiting with us from Action in Recovery is Jamie Lee. I want to talk a little bit, Jason, about the stigma that a lot of people still have against people who are in recovery from addiction. It's like they can never get away from it, you know. It's like the big red A on their chest from classic American literature. This remains a problem, does it not?
Yes, it definitely still remains a problem, but it has lessened since I've been first involved. I think some of the onus falls on the people in recovery and people in the community. So by doing the action in recovery and doing good events in the community, them getting to see people in recovery do good things, I think it sheds a light on these are people, these are human beings that may have struggled before, but they're getting back on track. So being judged by who you are today, not who you were. But I mean, that's, to be a realist, that's going to be tough for anybody to completely remove the stigma. But stigma, some people don't want to reach out for help because of that. And that's hindering their abilities to get help because they're worried about what the people in their church might say about their, you know, whatever the case may be. So I think the old model was is to go into a church, to go to one of these meetings, and that's the only place you could tell people you're in recovery. I wanted to bring it to the forefront that I am in recovery. I'm going to let everybody know this is who I am, but it doesn't define me as a person. My actions today define me as a person. So I'm hoping people will judge me on what I'm doing for the community and things like that, not what I did prior. And that's what I'm trying to do for the other people in the organization.
You've had many, many speaking engagements around the area over the past couple of years, haven't you?
Yes, I've got the pleasure of getting to speak at many different events here locally and some outside of the town. And it's just raising awareness for people and just owning it. I'm a person in recovery, but I'm a human being, and I just want the word to get out there that for the people that are struggling, they might have a loved one or something like that. I want them to know that there is help available and it is possible for their loved one to get recovery and get in recovery and live in the life of recovery, whatever that is for that individual. There's really no cookie cutter, this is what recovery. My recovery will be different from somebody else's. Obviously, it incorporates the abstinence of chemicals to a certain extent. Of whatever my drug of choice was or whatever the case may be, that's got to be removed. But other than that, what I do, like physical fitness, going to the gym, I read a lot, things like that that I incorporate for my recovery might not be the same for somebody else. So it's kind of tailor-made, individualized recovery programs per person. But that's what I try to do. I think before it was all, this is what it was. This, you have to do it this way, or this is the only way you can do it. And unfortunately, I think that push people away from seeking help. So
we've learned a lot in recent years. I personally have learned a lot in just the past couple of years about addiction and the brain. You know, for many, many years, Jamie's already shaking her head because she knows where I'm going with this. People, when they would encounter someone or hear about someone who was battling, well, just for an example, an opioid addiction. Well, that's their choice, you know. They chose to do this, so too bad. We've learned a lot now about how the brain is affected by addiction, and it's really not a choice in many times, is it?
Well, I think that's where the disease aspect of it really does come into play. And as Jason said, it's a disease of choice. But we really have done a fantastic job of really understanding addiction better on a human level as to what it does to our bodies. It's been fantastic that we've been able to really develop an understanding of what those chemicals do to our brain, to the receptors. And that information being out there definitely helps people to understand things better. It even helps to understand just from the recovery aspect of why it is that your body maybe is craving the different things that it's craving. And from that, we've also learned different techniques that can be utilized in order to combat some of that. As Jason said, you know, going to the gym is a top priority for him because it definitely helps, you know, with building endorphins and in different aspects in that capacity. But it also, it's a lot of it is learning self-worth again. And learning that you are worthy of recovery and worthy of being loved. That's something that a lot of people in recovery that I've learned have really struggled with, is their sense of self has been so diminished over the years of use and the things that they've done that sometimes feeling like they're worth recovery and worth having a life that is worth living is something that they struggle with. So the empowerment aspect of, you know, what it is that, that Jason does really helps a lot with that. The cognitive behavioral therapy, he runs a meeting every Wednesday evening that is CBT, and it really has a tremendous impact on them being able to see that there is so much potential and so much worth inside each individual. We just have to nurture it and grow it so that they can really live the life that they were meant to live.
Don't give up on people who are battling addiction.
Absolutely, do not. There's potential in every single human being living, and really that key phrase of they're a human being is really what we need to focus on. It's not are they in addiction or are they in recovery. They're a human being. And it's, like I said earlier, it's been a blessing to be a part of this journey.
You're on a meeting every week?
Yes, every Wednesday night from 7:30 to 8:30.
Where?
Where is it?
It's at First English Lutheran Church right on Main Street across from Dunkin' Donuts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We run it every Wednesday night. We have different topics. We just try to address the people. The reason why they use chemicals is to escape reality. That's really what it comes down to. They're no longer getting high, as people think, like, oh, they're just having fun and enjoying life too much. Most of the people progress when you're in active addiction to the point where you're just escaping your reality. You can't live to be breathing in your own body. Like, you just can't stand to be in your present moment. So you're trying to escape that constantly. And what you use to escape, it causes you more problems, which then makes the cycle continue. So we try to break that and then help these individuals create a reality that they want to be present in, so they don't want to jeopardize being present in their current lives, so they don't want to make these choices. So it's kind of a process, a holistic approach that it takes, but definitely running that meeting every week. It helps me because it reminds me of these things, and it definitely helps the individuals get to see where their thinking patterns are negatively impacting their lives and how they can change them thinking patterns to positively impact their lives.
So. Could these principles apply to someone who's battling alcohol addiction as well?
Absolutely. This goes across the board. To be honest with you, every human being, just non-addiction or not normal people, we call them normies, I guess, those people can benefit from it, because all human beings that I come in contact with have negative thinking patterns, ways that they think that negatively affect their life, whether it's loneliness, depression, anxiety, anything in that. So by helping people create new pathways and new directions to think, you basically create a better reality for that individual, which then helps them not want to jeopardize it by doing negative things.
You're wearing a shirt with an intriguing message on the front. Just three words: decide, commit, succeed.
Yes. I'm big on positive, just positive messaging. I think our diet is what I tell the guys, isn't just what food we eat. It's what we listen to, what we watch on TV, what we read. Everything that we ingest mentally is part of the diet. So we try to formulate positive messaging to people. The more positive you have in your life, the more positive you'll feel, the more positive you'll behave. So
we've seen what I would categorize as significant progress in specifically the battle against opioids over the past year or two. We've had a number of many meetings here in our area, news reports all over the place. I have to think now that if there's anybody that doesn't recognize what a serious problem this is, they must be living under a rock. I mean, you're never going to reach them. You know, how could you possibly escape the knowledge of this? But when you look at it from the perspective, Jamie Lee, of someone who is battling addiction, the big story for them, I guess, is hope. We want to make sure that they realize there is hope for the future. There is hope for recovery.
Absolutely. There's hope and potential, and that is a very strong message that we need to encourage and keep putting out. But that message really isn't just for those in addiction. It's for all capacities of the community, because it's affected so many different things. You know, those that work in law enforcement, you know, it's had an impact on them. Those that work in the medical field, it's had an impact on them. The children that are growing up with, you know, parents that have, you know, gone down that path, it's affected them, as well as the parents that have watched their children go through it. So there really is nobody that has not been affected in some capacity. But bringing awareness to the table, bringing understanding, having a better knowledge base of what it is that addiction is, but also what recovery is, bringing recovery kind of out of the shadow, and the importance of, you know, any of the AA, NA, any of those meetings, I mean, that cannot be overlooked. Those are very powerful tools in the field of recovery, and allowing people to feel comfortable to go to those meetings, because as we were talking about the stigma of recovery, sometimes people are uncomfortable to admit that they have a problem and they need to seek help because of that stigma of, oh, you're in recovery, or, oh, you're battling addiction. We really want to remove that, because if there's a tool that somebody can utilize to better their lives, we want them to feel capable of going and doing that. So, you know, if we can bring that out of the shadows a little bit and say, hey, I'm in recovery, and I'm still a human being who's doing important and wonderful things with my life, and that gives hope to somebody else to be able to do the same, then that's what we want to provide to them. It's important.
People are afraid that others will look down on them if they
admit that they have a problem.
Public, yeah, but if they see them walking into a meeting somewhere, for example.
And it's so funny to me, because if you have cancer, you're not afraid to go to the doctor and get treatment because you need it to save your life. But if you're in addiction, you have to worry about, what does that mean? You know, is somebody going to judge me for going and getting the help that I need? Yeah. And we want to remove that stigma. We also want to remove the stigma from the parent that says, you know, I'm afraid to admit that my child has a problem. That parent shouldn't be alone. They should know that there's resources available for them as well to be able to heal themselves and also help their child in an effective manner.
The parent might think that somehow they failed.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. There's parents that feel that they have failed, and that's really not the case. It's really just not the case, and we want them to feel comfortable to be able to say, you know, I need help. I need help with dealing with what I am. I need help dealing with the emotional toll this has taken on me, and just feel supported and loved and cared for. And if we can help break that stigma down so that people are comfortable getting help in whatever that capacity is, we want to be, you know, somebody that trailblazes that for them.
Gosh, I'm so glad that you're working in this area, because it's something that I personally need to look at it from this point of view. And I'm sure many of our listeners are
pleased
to know that you're
working
here. Yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot of people that support us. I just wanted to make sure it's not just me. I have tons of people that support us. Pastor Benson is part of our board. Tony Shalaba, he's a very, very key participant in all this. Mm-hmm. I would say the commissioners, all three of them. Donnie Genereski from Butler Drug and Alcohol. We've got a group of people. I've noticed that Butler has a lot of good people doing a lot of good things that don't get recognition nearly enough. But I think, because we see the negative all the time, but I think there's a lot of positive going on here in Butler County, and I think more people need to be aware of what's going on. So that's another reason for the event, is to let people know that may be struggling with no hope, that there are things going on in Butler that we're doing to change the way Butler is currently and to make it better for everybody.
I hear you. Well, folks, if you or someone you know or a family that you know might be helped by this Recovery Month gathering coming up Saturday, September 7th, which is a week from this Saturday. It takes place at the City Farmers Market. And it's, you said 5 o'clock in the evening you get underway,
yes.
Jason? 5 until 9 with live music, auctions, and food. Chinese auction, delicious food.
Food's free also. To as many people as we can. Within reason, as many people as we can feed, but yes.
not going to feed the 5,000, but...
We're playing on a few hundred.
Where can people get more information on this? You have a Facebook page or something about all of this?
We do. Action and Recovery is on Facebook. Just put in Action Recovery. It'll bring you right to our page, and that'll give you information on this event and also just on some of the other things that we're doing in the community, things we're taking on. It's a great place to get resources and also lots of motivational posts. We try and encourage motivational every single day, so you'll get a lot of that there, too.
I'm into that. Thanks for being here today. Thanks for chatting with us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Jason Beckwith and Jamie Lee from Action in Recovery. There is hope. That wraps up our program for today. Thanks for sharing with us, and I hope you can be here tomorrow, 12:30, for the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn. Among our guests tomorrow, Jane Frazier. Not Jason. Jason sitting right across from me right now. We'll be talking with Jane Frazier about stuttering. Stuttering. Yes, there is a foundation, a national foundation that deals with stuttering. Mm.
So I will be tuning in for that one.
We'll be talking with her. Enjoy the rest of your day, folks. See you tomorrow at 12:30.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.